6.5% was it? Is that what the current odds are of the Stanley Cup?
Well, and if you look at the round by round progression, the Stanley Cup favorite is the Vancouver Canucks.
Like, what a time to be alive!
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust, this is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup we could afford under the salary cap. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Sports Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com. I am Chris at Lightforce, getting blinded currently by Matley at Matley underscore 61 and a Forsyth at A4SA03, and continuing to remain unfit to podcast, even though the Canucks, spoiler alert, are no longer in the playoffs, is Adam O'Bonnell Carter at Adam FOC. Welcome, the two of you. What's new?
Not much, just coming off the long weekend. I feel like I spent most of it sitting on Highway 99 in traffic on the way to Whistler and back, but no, it was a fun time.
As I mentioned on Twitter, I'm upset that I did not get an invite. I thought I would be great company for you and Annalise.
Yeah, just two
the worst.
Women in the late 20s. And
I'd bring Baby Force and Wife Force with me. Like,
actually, we would have had space for Baby Force. There was a weird bunk bed in our room for some reason. So,
oh, is that kind of place you were staying in? Weird.
Yeah.
Like it's like a family one, like, you know, like.
But yeah, they had a very strict weight limit on the bunk bed, so we weren't about to test it out.
So what you're saying is I probably shouldn't climb into it.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Off the rails again.
That's okay. That's what you and I do best. Matt's here just like scowling. But in fairness, I think we need to take control of this podcast, because the last time Matt was here, it just all went askew.
Yeah. Matt, you want to explain yourself?
Look, I have a very bad internet connection in my neighborhood. Chris, you can attest to this. You know how some people have internet like 500 and some have like, I don't know, 500 seems to be the thing around here, right? I have something internet like that, 15, and I do speed tests every now and then, and I'm lucky to break 10 megabytes per second download speed sometimes.
So you're basically dealing with dial-up here.
Yeah, I was going to say you're stuck in the Stone Ages. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the internet is poor, and of course, last week we did an episode with Anna and myself, and basically the episode didn't record properly because there were just drops in where voices should have been throughout the entirety of the podcast. It was a disaster. Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot for nothing, Zoom.
Yeah, well, that allowed Anna and I to then reconvene and record a much more optimistic episode. And obviously I was there, which just makes it that much better, using Squadcast that we use when I'm around. Like, I mean, again, I only bring the good technology with me and the, you know, the super speed internet.
But obviously it allowed the Canucks to play again and win again. So
that twice. Was secretly the lucky charm is what you're saying.
Well, Anna and I did everything that we possibly could do to compel the Vancouver Canucks to win games. I don't think the two of us could have done anything more short of channel our inner Demko, because let's be real here. If it wasn't for the fact that this guy decided to stop every single puck thrown his way and then some, the Vancouver Canucks would have been out well before Anna and I had to re-record an episode to push content out. But hey, we got a couple more games, so we're all the better for it, right? Is that how we look at this?
I think so. Pushing Vegas to game 7.
I'm a glass half full guy, the most optimistic person on this podcast. So I can attest that I am very happy with how the season ended, short of it being a win, of course.
Yeah. But this episode, we are going to go and recap the series. The rundown that Matt spent hours putting together, introduction, was dang it. Rewind, series recap, half full, half empty, what we're looking at for next year, and an F-word off-season look ahead. So you know what? Let's not waste your time any further and jump directly into Rewind. I mentioned this on Twitter at the conclusion of Game 7. This has been the first Vancouver Canucks team and potentially time that I have been emotionally invested probably since 2011. Like even that sort of 2011-2012 series where the Vancouver Canucks were almost expected to get the Stanley Cup final once again, having like won the league in December. The heart wasn't in it. I was just like, whatever, let's just get to the playoffs. And then since then, it's been a struggle. And you've probably, as listeners, been hearing me talk about this numerous times. Yet, I don't know if it's just the pandemic and the fact that we were getting summer hockey or whatever it is, but the Vancouver Canucks performance was the tonic that I needed to reinvest myself in this team.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Like, I think it's been hard to care. So 2015, I was pretty invested. That's why I was so annoyed by Calgary Flames. But yeah, it's been
a real good season.
It was a real good season. But yeah, like we've hard to hit the highs, really. Mm-hmm. We've had some really good moments since then, beating, like opening the season, beating Kings, like convincingly, beating Boston 9-3. Lots of beating Boston, actually, and it's been fun. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the highs haven't really been there over a sustained period.
Well, I mean, let's preface this by saying, of course, we were invested in years prior or since 2011. Of course, like we're doing a podcast, so we're always invested. But to Chris's point, like we were certainly much more emotionally invested this playoff run than we had mm-hmm. been in many years. I probably would agree, though, with you, Chris, that this was the first time since 2011 that you got the feelings for a Vancouver Canucks team, yeah, so to speak. And, I joked about this in Discord, but like during game six, the heart rate was at about 110 during that last minute of the game. And I hadn't stood up in hours. So I think that speaks to how physically involved I felt like I was in that game.
Well, so, and that's the thing, like, I look at the series against the Wild, I was there, and I was hoping the Vancouver Canucks would win, because I simply wanted this team to go and sort of prove the naysayers wrong. Like, I know we as a podcast sort of talked about the odds, and again, that's sort of us trying to generate our own emotional investment in our podcast to you, our listeners, but I want them to get past the Wild. Then, once they started playing the Blues, I hope the Canucks would beat the Blues, and obviously they did. But I, at that point, we're start of almost coming to accept that this bubble will burst. And then when the Canucks started playing the Golden Knights, I really didn't care if the Canucks were going to win until the trash talking from the Vegas Golden Knights took off. And at that point, that's when I, like, you could ask Marnie, I started to, like, you know, celebrate every goal by out shouting whoever it was that was my neighbor, equally shouting. Like, we were essentially on competitive, you know, television services, because I would scream a little bit sooner than he would. And then to see the performances that we got from the Vancouver Canucks, and specifically Thatcher Demko in game five and game six, like game seven, I was full clench. Unfortunately, was it Stone that got that goal? Or who was it that scored the power play goal?
It was Shea Theodore who scored the opening goal.
It was Theodore? Okay. Like, when that goal got scored, it was like, welp. And
did it feel like when Bergeron scored the winner in game seven?
That was.
Yes, that's exactly. It was the same emotion, because I didn't, like, I commented a little bit in C4 Discord about how Demko needed to go and score a goal, because I think that was the only way that the Canucks were going to get off any offense. And I'm not faulting the team in front of them. Like, this is a team that had to play playoff hockey. And I know Anna and I had a debate over the play-ins being playoff hockey, but the Canucks had to play quite a bit of hockey prior to the Golden Knights, and they looked gassed in game seven.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, getting through game five, you just thought Canucks can't survive if they play another game like this. Mm-hmm. But they did.
Yeah.
And then you stop game seven, you think, well, Canucks can't play another game like that. And they did. And it finally came home to Bruce that doesn't really work as a tactic, letting shots rain down on your goalie and creating nothing in return.
But that said, did you not at least at some point in Game 7, and especially when Ryan Reeves took that five-minute major, think, my God, the Canucks are going to steal this game in some way, shape, or form?
So the five-minute major, if the Canucks, in my mind, if the Canucks got production on that 5-minute
just
major.
One,
similar
right?
to how, you know, I think it was again in 2011, the Canucks series against the Sharks, was it where they had the
game four?
The Sharks had like, double minor right. or 5 minutes.
Salo scored two or something.
Yeah, and that essentially it was series done. Like that was sort of the moment. I didn't have faith that the Canucks were going to be able to get a goal because of how anemic their power play had been all series long. And unfortunately, as we saw, all that 5-minute major seemed to do was amp the Golden Knights up that, oh man, the man is out to stick it to us. So we need to buckle down. Like,
I've got to say,
we're going to talk about the Reeves hit.
I was more on the Matt side of things that I thought, oh geez, like they've been given this golden opportunity and like all they have to do is score one goal and the Knights don't seem like they're going to do anything else. Like,
well, no. And that, like, and you, how much faith did you have in Demko of stopping every single puck thrown his way at that point?
I had all the confidence. Yeah.
Pretty high.
Yeah. If the Canucks got that goal, that would be it. Like I think we would have still been full clench. Like all three of us here would have been rocking like a 12 pack and our butts would have been svelte as possible. But the thing about that is, yeah, it was a one goal game. Like it was, I mean, that Bo Horvat, Brock Besser 2-on-1 where Besser was robbed. That puck goes in the net. The complexity changes. Vegas had all the pressure. The Canucks have been playing with house money. And if anything, people had written off the Canucks, including us here at C4 going into game five. So yeah, you know what? You're right. If the Canucks had scored that one goal, I just didn't have faith that the power play was what was going to get it for them. And I don't know what it is, but once Vegas scored, that's when we suddenly saw almost the match lit under the Canucks. They started doing the stuff that got them all the success, activating the defense, crashing the net, playing that aggressive hockey. And
it was so frustrating watching that, honestly. Just thinking, you had to be almost out the door before you play like that.
But just to your point, you know, if the Canucks get a goal there, or if they even open the scoring at all, sure, you don't love their chances of defending a one-goal lead because it's Vancouver, but at the same time, going into that moment of Game 7, it was very clear that Thatcher Demko was living inside Vegas's heads. There were points throughout games 5, 6, and 7 where I probably would have bet Vegas didn't think they were ever going to score another goal again. There were some chances
in the handshake
where Vegas looked like they themselves, like I could not believe how some of those chances did not go in the net.
Well, so like, you know, in the handshake, when Stone's like talking to Demko, we don't know what's being said, but you can tell Stone's like, holy F, where did you come from? Like the Golden Knights social media, when it was announced that Demko was going to be in it, it's like, oh, and that's some other guy. I guarantee you, everyone in Vegas knows who Thatcher Demko is and probably doesn't want to see this kid ever again. And then like across the league, Demko has used this to say, hey, I've arrived and I'm here. Now there obviously needs to be more to it in subsequent seasons. But if the Canucks score a goal, I don't think Demko lets anything in. In fact, I don't think Demko was maybe even given the opportunity to let one in because I believe the Canucks team in front of them, right down to Petey, would have thrown their face in front of a puck if it meant stopping it from getting to the net. Not to suggest that they weren't playing that type of hockey, but they would have willed themselves into the Western final.
Yeah, I do believe that. And I think Pedersen played insane defensive hockey over this series, but specifically Game 7. But, you know, when your best player is playing, it's stopping the puck from going in the net. That's not great for your offense.
No, true. It's not good for your offense. But that, you know, I think that further invests why we as Canucks fans need to be behind Petey. I mean, he's definitively an offensive player, but he skates between goal line to goal line, end to end. Like there's no lack of hustle. And, you know, the Sedins kind of play that way, but I quite frankly don't think they had the pure skill or almost
the chip on the shoulder that Petey has.
No, but, and Petey plays with this chip, right? He's not your prototypical Swedish hockey player or stereotypical Swedish hockey player, right? He's more
with North American heart.
Well, you know what I mean? Like the argument is that
I'm
they're
just teasing, don't
quote
worry.
Unquote too soft. And I'm not saying any of the Swedish players are too soft. It's just that you don't see the physicality. You don't see sort of like sometimes Petey has a little bite in him. Like
yeah,
you almost great. Almost to how Pavel Bure had a little bite in him. No, we're not talking any Shane Churla moments, mind you, but the point being is that it's good to see about PD and to think what might come from that.
Oh, totally.
You know, and I we've been talking quite a bit about the series. Let's specifically talk about the Ryan Reeves hit. And we're a Canucks podcast. Ryan Reeves got a five in a game. And it blows my mind that the panel in reviewing it has a debate as to whether or not it's five in a game. Like, when it first happened, I felt that should be five. Now I'm a Canucks fan, biased, blue glasses. So take that for what it's worth. But then I saw the replay. It made it worse. Like, it was clear. Primary contact was Mott's forehead.
It was his chin. Yeah.
And, well, point being, though, it's not like the argument that, oh, it's not a headshot is, oh, they hit the shoulder, body, back somewhere. Somehow the head just got involved. And we've talked about this on our podcast, how the NHL needs to go and take that type of crap out of the game. Yes, it's a big hit and we don't want to lose big hits, but I'm sorry. If losing big hits means protecting players' noggins, I'm for it. But then to see the suspension being one game, that's it.
I just think it's so hard to listen to language like the player safety puts out when they say avoidable but not intentional. I don't understand how that works.
Well, here, you're driving your car down the street and you didn't intend to go and, you know, run over that bicyclist that happened to be on the road with you, but you did. Now, that might mitigate the severity of intention, but you're still getting... you're probably getting hit harder, you know, because you did it. Like, I'm sorry. I get worked up, and I know it's a Vancouver Canucks player that got involved. And the thing I'm trying not to go and compare to is Aaron Rome, where they had to get down to the microsecond to say it's worth four Stanley Cup playoff games, which are considered to be four games per on their own. So what Aaron Rome did is worth 16 regular season games. And Ryan Reeves is not even,
But it's the frustrating thing, like, disregard 2011 is just players getting hit in the head. I know it was his jaw, but, like, it's still really dangerous. And I just hate seeing stuff like that happen, even in the regular season. Like, I understand playoff intensity, whatever, but it's just, I don't see under the current punishment scale how it's meant to get any better, how it's meant to discourage head hits, how it's meant to discourage, like, anything, you know, dangerous like that.
I'm not at all saying the NHL has to return to the code and the old school hockey where no one messed with Wayne Gretzky because Semenko jumped over the boards, right? Like, I'm not suggesting that type of style return, but frankly,
well, someone has prevented,
like, the policing existed because the players did it themselves. That's not right, but the NHL doesn't seem to want to be interested in policing it.
Yeah, that's the NHL kind of tried to step in to stop stuff like that, but they're really doing a bad job of it.
Yeah. Anywho, I'm sorry, I'll get back off my soapbox here. It was a bad hit, and I'm tilted because of the one game suspension. So I'm like, oh, it's one Western Conference final. That's more than one game, Chris. Yeah, you're right, but that still doesn't feel like it's adequate. Then there was someone actually, I can't remember which media member it was on Twitter, defending, like, oh, well, Mott came back to the game. How does the severity of the injury incurred have anything to do with the penalty to the player? And if that is truly the case, another 2011 example that was probably, it was not intentional whatsoever, but Mason Raymond had his back broken. Is there anything worse than that in hockey short of death?
And also, can we say that, like, a player returning to a playoff game, an elimination game as well, isn't necessarily proof of lack of injury?
Yeah, I just...
that's a whole other conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I don't think that proves anything.
Yeah. Now, there are those that might say, oh, well, you know, the Canucks got a golden opportunity, as we have, and I totally agree they do. But they didn't capitalize on it. You know, I'm not... it's not sour grapes. I'd still be upset about Reeves' suspension had the Golden Knights been eliminated. It probably wouldn't have been sufficient. He might have gotten a few more games whenever games might be played. But, you know, at that point in time, what does it truly matter, right?
Yeah.
Oh, anywho, the series is, however, done. Canucks are going to be needing to go and review whatever 2020-21 means. It might just be 2021 or 20. Yeah, 21. Sorry, there's too many 20s right now.
Yeah.
But any final thoughts here on the series before we dive into Half Full, Half Empty?
I'm proud of a lot of what they did.
Yeah. Agreed. So we'll take ourselves a short break here. You're listening to the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast on the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on that.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? That because he was mad.
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He didn't play. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
If there is a silver lining in the Vancouver Canucks no longer being in the NHL playoffs, is that they have the ability to make deals. It's what St. Louis and Montreal did prior to our last episode. And I think we'll have to see the Vancouver Canucks, or at least Jim Benning, work some magic going into next season, whenever it may kick off, whether it be in 2020 or in 2021. But what kind of expectations do you have for the Vancouver Canucks going into next season? I mean, they are pretty tight to a cap that is going to remain stagnant for a number of years. They have some tough contracts still on the books, whether it be a Sutter or an Erickson, or you might argue a Miller or a Myers contract, even though both Miller himself specifically, I acquitted himself very well. He did exactly what he was brought in to do and more. Myers, I mean, proof in the pudding, the moment he was no longer on the Canucks blue line, the Canucks blue line was having some troubles. But like we were sort of chatting a little bit about this on our last episode. Like, I think Benny needs to work some magic here, and I don't know how he does it. Like, I don't know how he finds dance partners to move contracts. And when it comes to acquiring players to move this roster forward, I don't necessarily know if there's anything out there that they can really look to acquire. They have to look at what they have already on the roster, keeping some of that intact, and then hoping that Utica provides answers. Am I wrong here?
Well, first of all, from a team perspective, I mean, my expectations are this team is making the postseason every year. I'm not expecting them to get back to the second round next year because, let's be honest, as you guys mentioned, there's a cap struggle that they're dealing with right now, and there are still some dead weight, as it were. And so I think that there is the possibility that they could take a step back next season because they're still hindered by those bad contracts. Now, that said, I think I said this to Anna after the end of the St. Louis Blues series. The expectation now is that they're done with the rebuild. The rebuild is over as far as I'm concerned. And the expectation, again, should be that they're making the postseason for the next decade, in my mind. From an individual player's perspective, we can get into that later, but I'm curious to hear your guys' thoughts.
Yeah, I think I said this last... I don't know. Remember if this was on the Lost episode or not.
For the episode prior.
Yeah. But what I said was... yeah, they're closer than we thought. So I do think that I expect them to improve from here on out. And that doesn't mean make the second round or better from here on out. But I do expect their season to improve. I expect their players to improve. Our core is getting better and better. But like... I still think we're a significant injury away to our core to like, if we get a significant injury to our core or to our goalie, whoever that is, I think we're in trouble still.
The I mean, we think back to the start of this past season when I would say the four of us, it's been a while since I remember Adam being on an episode, so he may or may not have been there. But I don't think we were suggesting that this was a playoff team. We kind of committed to it being possible, like they would be in contention, which frankly was something they had not been in some time. But I know I was on that. I'm not entirely sure this year is the year. I think next year would be. Now, fast forward to where we are today. I think, yeah, Matt's bang on here. This is a playoff team, right? This and Anna, to your point, that's what we now expect. But I was sort of thinking as this sort of playoff was taking place, and then, you know, factoring in the result of the pandemic and the impact on league revenues and how the cap is going to be as it is, might one argue that that window not only opened real wide, but now is almost started to shut again? And I'm not knocking the likes of the core, Horvat, Pedersen, Besser, Hughes, you know, like Demko. Like, there is a whole lot of potential, a whole lot of light here. This is a team that one can be excited with. But they're going to run into some difficulties. I don't know how to express them any other way. Like, you know, there was the running joke at the start of the play-ins that Brock Besser would be traded for cap space. And I know in C4, we kind of poked fun at that shirt that started off with cap instead of Horvat, and someone had put space on it. I kind of worry that through no fault of their own, the Vancouver Canucks are being dealt an extremely tough blow, one that's going to be felt by a number of teams, but particularly for the team that we follow. Like, again, back to this, am I wrong here? Like, are we not sort of seeing this window close unless magic happens? Like, yeah, I think they should make the playoffs next season, but I don't know subsequently what to expect beyond that.
Well, I mean, I think that there is, I think I saw this on Twitter today from Rick Dhaliwal, but there is some belief, at least internally on the team, that they can find someone to take on Brandon Sutter, possibly as Sven Berchi. I mean, right there, those are two players that make about a combined $7.8 million in cap space. So, I mean, it's definitely a tall order. You might have to throw in a sweetener or two to get rid of both of those players, but I don't think it's completely out of the realm of possibility that you can at least free up some cap space necessary to give yourself a shot at bringing back two or even three of Toffoli, Tanev, and Markstrom.
Oof. I mean, I think that's such a long shot to get to pencil all three, and I think one will have to go. And I'm sure it's helped Toffoli be, you know, slightly more convinced to make it to the Game 7 second round with this team.
And beyond that, the roster that he's going to get to play with and grow with, like, you know, this would be, you know, thinking back when Ryan Kessler was looking to leave the Vancouver Canucks, there was a reason why he went to Anaheim. He wanted to go to a roster that he would be excited to be around, not one that was going to retool or rebuild or whatever the Canucks were using to describe their efforts. So I could see Toffoli wanting to stay, but then if he also wants to get paid, I don't know, even to the possibility of keeping all three, he might be one of the three. Like, I'm not as confident we see two of three, let alone three of three.
Yeah, and obviously it depends, like, if there is those takers for, I mean, Sutter would be a significant contract off the books, for sure. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Tyler Toffoli, I mean, as you say, like, great players to play with, but Green can't even say, like, oh, you're going to get to play on a line with Pedersen. Like, he can't, like, Green's panic button was the Lotto line, which is understandable. They're great together. But, you know, like, as much as I'm sure he enjoys playing with Bo and Tanner Pearson, like, I'm sure that's great. But I'm sure he loves playing with Pedersen, like, and Miller. Like, that's... Well,
the Lotto line had success in one season. It was one that sort of got put together, saw some success. I don't necessarily believe it's going to be the line locked in.
No, like, no, I agree.
Where, you know, the West Coast Express of the future, or the Sedins plus Burrows. I was going to say Sedins plus one, but let's be honest, Burrows was the guy on that line. The plus one was just whoever they made look awesome, like Anson Carter.
Don't you dare besmirch Anson Carter.
Man, the Sedins made Trent Klatt look awesome. Seriously.
No, I was going to go off the rails. I won't. But yeah, I agree. I'm not saying it's a line set in stone. Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering. I'm not sure that's like make or break for Tyler Toffoli being like.
No, I think it's like in my mind, it would be being part of an exciting roster. It's just the Canucks aren't the only exciting roster that'll be in the marketplace. And there are some exciting rosters out there that might have a little more money to throw his way.
Totally. And let's not forget that goaltending at the moment is still pretty unsure, and Tyler Toffoli mm-hmm. was there at the end when Demko was kind of thrown in, and it didn't go super awesome. As much fun as it was to watch him play, like, I'm sure that'll mm-hmm. also make him a little nervous, maybe. But yeah. It certainly does make me nervous.
So let me ask you this. If the Vancouver Canucks, you know, heaven forbid, go into the season and do poorly, what happens? Like, I think we're beyond the retool. We're beyond the rebuild. Like, there were rumors that if the Vancouver Canucks lost to the Minnesota Wild, that Jim Benning would be pretty much looking for a new job. And I would imagine if the Canucks get another GM in, then unfortunately Travis Green's job is done. That's not happening any longer. And no one could argue with the success that the Vancouver Canucks got getting through almost to the Western Final. But I would have to think that if things were to go sideways next season, that ownership might demand change. Even in spite of the fact that next season is not a regular season, it should not even be equated to being a regular season. Like, there are so many things that are going to play. It's going to be a reduced schedule. It might be a compressed schedule. It's going to be a roster that's predicated on a cap that's not moving, with an anchor in a cap recapture penalty on top of some tough contracts that were signed when, like, they're, you know, all these different things. So, like, am I, again, wrong that it's possible that ownership would then go panic. And push the panic button? Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think I'm more worried about them thinking that the Canucks are one player away from winning the cup.
Well, they might be, but I don't think they can afford one player.
Exactly. And there's no way that that's what they should be spending their tiny, minuscule amount of cap space on. It should be re-signing the players we have.
They could, the Vancouver Canucks would have to mortgage their future and possibly the window to go and get that one player and get rid of a couple contracts. So,
yeah. And like with Petey and Quinn coming off ELC, like, there's no way you should be doing that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it'll be a concern enough as it is trying to re-sign who they want to re-sign. But mm-hmm. I don't think they panic that easily. I don't know. What about you, Matt?
I mean, I'm thinking that the Canucks should be taking a more conservative approach in their offseason. I mean, we can get into that in the next segment. But, you know, I think the time for using free agency to sign stopgap players, veteran players to surround your young talent with, I think that time is over, to be honest with you. The evidence that we saw throughout the Blues and the Vegas series is that Petey and Quinn and Horvat and JT Miller, and through spurts, albeit inconsistently, Brock Besser, those guys can carry the load for the Canucks and can carry it pretty darn well. Right now, I think the onus should be on developing from within, getting your players to be your best players, the players that you drafted to be your best players, and then surrounding them with complementary players who can just make you a deeper team. You know, if Vegas can put together a team out of scraps, I'm sure that even Jim Benning can find it within him to get the supporting cast needed to surround Pettersson and Hughes and Miller, etc., with the right, you know, the right talent.
We should note, though, that it was more than just scraps that Vegas had. They were also able to weaponize those scraps to get themselves draft picks to then go and deal for tangible assets.
Oh, yeah, I know. But, like, the fact is they're still players that were unwanted at the end of the day. Yeah, they got Jonathan Marchessault with Riley Smith, but they're still players that were on the scrap heap.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, that... God, that Seattle expansion draft scares me because I can't see the rules being any different. But it'll just suck. You'll have the Vegas Golden Knights and the Seattle Kraken being successful out of the gate. And then you'll have Sportsnet dropping crazy graphics on the Vancouver Canucks again. I got run by a fake tweet, didn't I, when I saw that? I didn't see it during the game.
What?
The Canucks haven't won a cup in 50 years or something like that.
I mean,
lots of fake tweets going into this playoff series.
Yeah, but, you know, pay attention, guys.
Hey. We're going to take ourselves a quick break. You're listening to the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com and the Full Press Coverage Network.
He liked to say the F word.
Oh, then get the F here, then. Okay, see ya.
He's going to have the F word on it.
I wish I could give you a explanation about it. I can't.
You out of hand.
Said the F word, Dad.
You called me the F word.
We kind of already did this a little bit, talking a little bit about the offseason look ahead. And that's because, again, I look at the F word as being where we go and rant, and maybe this is the place that we will. But this offseason is probably the most unique that I can think of in my memory. And I'm old, so I can remember a lot. I think back to off seasons where we had lockouts and they weren't as crazy as what we're going to see here. Like there's no compliance buyouts. Like for people who are saying, oh, they'll allow teams, the league and the union will get together to allow teams to buy players out to bring their cat. That doesn't exist.
I wish. Right.
That doesn't exist. The only buyout mechanism that exists is the one that's already present, which don't make the buyout of a Louis Erickson all that palatable or Brandon Sutter all that palatable, because the actual cap hit isn't going to help. It helps a bit, but again, it's just, I kind of wonder what the Vancouver Canucks and specifically Jim Benning will do to work magic. And I have been hard on Benning since he's been here all along. I was a Lawrence Gilman guy. There's no surprise to anyone.
You're still a Lawrence Gilman guy.
Well, the ship has sailed. Lawrence Gilman is not taking over for Jim Benning at this point. I have to wish for the success of the Vancouver Canucks that Jim Benning works magic. Does he have it in him?
I mean, evidence over the last 3 years is not compelling.
His last offseason wasn't bad. Yes, he gave out some money the Miller and the Myers deals and trade and contract. I don't think you'll find a lot of people who will have said that when they saw it, they were fully on board with it. But then as the season went on, it was kind of like what you could stomach. And let's be realistic here. If this is what the market will bear, did Jim Benning go and pay over market?
Okay. Well, because something's market value doesn't mean you have to buy it.
No, exactly. Like, yeah, do you want the Lamborghini on the lot when you can only afford the Mazda? Yeah, you don't go and mortgage your future for the Lamborghini because they'll eventually come and take it away from you.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not saying Myers isn't a good player. As you said, like, he really does a job and we miss him when he's not there, but it's just a lot of money to pay somebody. And it did seem like we were really doing the tough sell job on Myers to get him here.
Mm-hmm.
And it got wined
and dined and
did.
Never mind.
Hopefully that's it. Hopefully that's it on the rhymes. but yeah, and then offering to pay him $6 million, it's just like, okay. But I mean, what do we, like, what other option do we have to put our faith in him that he can wangle? And
you're right. I mean, we have to put this faith in Benning doing it. I just, I'm, I'm going to be so impressed when he pulls this off and he makes magic happen, and I'll be here eating crow. Like, Matt will be dropping in the crow audio. Like, it'll happen, because that's what's going to take place. I need to be optimistic here, right?
So let me ask you guys this question. What is a ideal off season for you look like? Like, give me one player who you feel confident that Jim Benning can safely unload, whether it be for sweetener or for at least like a small price.
The difficult part for me here is like, when I, like, what do we consider a sweetener? Like, are we talking about like
a B level prospect or like a third or fourth round pick?
Well, I think, okay, picks at this point, if it was third or fourth round picks, I don't really care. If the Vancouver Canucks hold on to them, they can deal with them as they please. If we're looking at players though, like who is it on the roster that people want? Like, I would love for them to find an opportunity for Berchi to get himself back in the NHL. I think he's an NHL player who's just unfortunately on 100%. A roster that won't allow for it, but it doesn't serve any purpose to have him in Utica buried. Cause then what other team looks at that as being a sweetener? Like, they would view that as, I'm helping the team out. Vertanen, who's an RFA.
I would be willing to give up Vertanen if you could unload Erickson or I want to be careful about how I do this. Erickson or Sutter. I probably would want to be able to get rid of Berchi for nothing.
Like, if the Canucks sign Vertanen, and I would imagine they would, they're going to get him at good money. Like, Vertanen has done himself no favors in the contract negotiation department. So it is, you know, think of like a Zach Cassian who turned his career around in Edmonton. Maybe that's what Jake needs. Jake needs that opportunity. Jared McCann, who the Canucks unfortunately sold out too quick, started to perform so well in Florida that he found his way to Pittsburgh. So, you know, I think Vertanen has that in him. I would love for that to happen in Vancouver, but yeah, there's sweetener there. But I don't know what else. Like, maybe we'd have to go into the Utica lineup, but then...
I mean, who do people want?
Like, would you throw in Cole Lynn to get rid of Brandon Sutter, for example?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but like, are we placing value on Cole Lynn that others may not equate?
Yeah, I think it's really difficult because there's a fact that, like, Canucks market, like, pay way more attention than... Like, obviously, everyone pays attention to their own prospects, but they also invest a lot in their prospects. Like, think about how hyped Brogan Rafty is. Has anyone outside of Vancouver heard of him? Not many.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, if we're assessing, like, the prospect pool for the Vancouver Canucks, I would be willing to throw in any prospect that is not any of the defensemen and that is not Nils Höglander, Vasily Podkolzin, and Mikey DiPietro. So any of the four prospects and any other goaltending prospect, and I would want to keep as many defense prospects as I can. Any one of those other players that I mentioned, like we're talking about... gosh, somebody give me a name here for forward prospects. Like,
well, I was going to forward
Jonah Gadjevic.
So essentially a Utica forward.
Yeah. Any Utica forward.
Reed Boucher.
I mean, no, he's not Canucks property anymore, but like any of those forward prospects I would be willing to throw in, because I can't foreseeably think that Cole Lind is going to be playing a role with the Canucks when you look at who their top six is now and the fact that Höglander and Podkolzin are probably ahead of him on the depth chart.
See, the struggle I have is that the moment we go in, like, I totally agree, the blue line is an area that the Vancouver Canucks need to develop in. They can't be tossing out blue chips there. But you just listed off all the sweetener in my mind. Everything else, I would be willing to use a sweetener, but like, we're talking like we've gone from real sugar to now we're going to the sweet and low.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, obviously. And I feel like I undervalued Scout's opinion there when I said earlier that no one really cares outside of Vancouver. Of course, like, people pay attention. But yeah, you might have to I feel like the prospects that we don't want to part with might be the ones with value, which is hard. I mean, maybe like Lucas Jacek, Tyler Graevac, but they're the only other ones of real note I can.
I will give you one other defenseman of that I would be willing to throw in as sweetener, Olli Levy.
Hmm. You'd probably irritate a few people with that.
Yeah, I probably would, but you know, I would be willing to throw in your Levy as a sweetener if you could unload like a Louis Erickson for sure.
Okay, yeah. See, okay, then that's where I think that's the level that the Vancouver Canucks probably need to get to execute on a deal like that, mm-hmm. to get rid of an Erickson contract, get rid of a Sutter contract. And I just want to point out, I'm buying into what Sutter's selling. It's just the number does not make any sense for the Vancouver Canucks.
Oh, like, let's be honest. I mean, going back to the playoff series, I mean, Brandon Sutter, sure, he had his fleeting moments of success. He had that one bad end goal against the St. Louis Blues. I think it was in game 5, if I'm not mistaken. And like I think he scored against Minnesota as well. But like, come on, Brandon Sutter showed up one in every 10 games, all things being equal. Oh,
no, agree. But like the Brandon Sutter we were promised is what we saw in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's right. That's sort of my point. The problem is we got Brandon Sutter finally showing up and doing the things that Mott can do all the time. And Brandon Sutter's making Sutter money, not Mott money, right?
Yeah, exactly. 100%. I think that's a really good way to put it. But to Matt's point, I do think there's someone we're going to have to get rid of that we don't want to get rid of, whether that's a top level prospect or like a defenseman we can't re-sign, because there's no way we get everyone that we want under the cap.
Well, they have $17 million projected to work with. Now, if Ferland is a big question mark,
I think he's done.
Obviously,
yeah, I think
right.
And also, with
things as they are. If that becomes an LTIR, that does give a little more flexibility to go 3.5 over. So that gives $20 million. But you have Tyler Toffoli, UFA. You've got Tanev, UFA. You've got Fantenberg, UFA. You've got Markstrom, UFA, and Baker of the Year, Louis Domingue. And Josh Levo too, but I kind of think Levo's done.
Sorry, we didn't really talk about this. First of all, Josh Levo is incredible, and I wish that the Canucks can re-sign him, but I know he's not the priority. But the other thing I was going to ask you guys, because we haven't talked about it yet, is the situation in goal. And I want to know if you guys would consider selling high on Thatcher Demko.
So
to get the pieces back that you would need to maybe unload some of those other bad contracts, or pocketing those pieces.
But Anna kind of talked about this last episode.
Yeah, I mean, I'll kind of say my piece again that we're going to lose one of our goalies probably soon, and like whether that's we don't re-sign Markstrom, he goes. Whether that's losing Demko in the expansion draft and he goes. And those are the two worst case scenarios of losing your goalies, right? So what if, I guess the third option would be losing via trade and getting something back.
What's the goaltending market like though? Like we've had this conversation before, and the common sort of retort is that there's never been a market for goaltenders. Like whether it's trades or what have you.
I think there are going to be a lot of teams that want goaltending, and they're going to look towards free agency to solve that problem. And I think that there are going to be some other teams that will not be able to address the holes of goaltending in free agency that are then going to come circling back to the Canucks to say, here's our best offer for Thatcher Demko. We think that we're getting a really proven goaltender and promising goaltender and a long-term solution in goal in Thatcher Demko. I mean, I don't think it's the expectation, but it is certainly shades of Corey Schneider, at least in the very worst.
It sure is, and we got into that last episode. Anna?
Yes, we did. Sorry. Yeah, well, I was just saying, I'm not saying 100% get rid of him. I'm definitely not saying, like, trade Demko tomorrow. But this is, might be our best opportunity to do it with all the goaltending kerfuffle in the playoffs. Like, there were a lot of goalie issues, whether it was injuries or bad performances and having to turn to your backup quite quickly.
Mm-hmm.
That happened a lot this playoffs, and having like the goalie that just stepped in and kept his team in the playoffs for three games in a row, like, basically.
I'm not suggesting it's a bad idea. I'm on board with this working. It's just, I wonder if the price that we would want or would expect to receive is anywhere near the price that he would actually obtain.
Yeah, I'm not saying you're wrong on that, but I just don't know if it gets better.
You know, I really wish that this wasn't a contract year for Markstrom.
Yeah,
if this was like the middle of his contract or the start of a new one, the Canucks have been burned by people under contract.
I know. And a cynical person would say that's all it is, you know, a contract year.
So to try and summarize, if you could give me one like prediction of what you think will happen in this offseason, what would it be in terms of like a player decision? It can be a hot take if you want.
Well, Toffoli.
Toffoli goes.
Yeah, that's not really a hot take.
No.
Probably not.
The hot take is he stays.
Yeah, I would agree. But I would say that I've kind of been saying that not since the beginning, but I've been saying that for a long time, and I don't think there's anything that's changed my mind.
You know what? I've as I'm been sitting here looking at Cap Friendly.
Yeah, what we're all on right now.
If Ferland goes on LTIR, that his salary is the raise that Markstrom would get.
Yep.
If Markstrom is like that, let's say that contract's settled, because that's a net zero because of the Ferland, you know, injury. And again, I'm not trying to hope that he's not on the roster. It's just
a very sad situation. But yeah. I like him so much.
At the end of the day, it's a business. Okay.
And also because I want him to have a good life from now on in. Oh, and yeah. You could see it going south very quickly if he keeps playing.
Yeah, I would prefer Ferland to be able to return to play the way he plays. I totally would. I think he actually contributes to the Vancouver Canucks in ways, but it's you know tough spot.
The money frees up thinking, room for Markstrom.
All of a sudden, it frees up Markstrom. And if Markstrom is a problem you don't have to worry with contract-wise, you suddenly have money for Toffoli and Tanev. Like, that's really the difference we're talking about. Like, when we go and we talk about seeing Erickson's contract off the books or a Sutter contract off the books, obviously having both those contracts gone would be phenomenal. But if only one of them comes off the books, that's because it's giving the Canucks room to keep it to Foley, Tanev, Markstrom, or failing that, an equivalent replacement.
I'm convinced that these things are going to happen. Berchi will not be on the roster. They will find someone to take Berchi for free. I think that whether it's by hook or by crook, Louis Erickson is going to either be riding the buses in Utica for $1 million of a cap hit less, or he will be on another team, and that Ferland's time with the Canucks is unfortunately probably over. Those three moves right there, I think, free up quite a bit of money to at least give you a credible shot to try and bring back the key UFAs that are about to hit the market.
Traded for future considerations?
I think so. And I also think part of me believes that the Demko performance has also eased the negotiation restraints on the Canucks management. I mean, the Canucks don't have to go back to Jacob Markstrom now.
You need to listen to this podcast called C4, Matt. Last episode was a cracker.
I hear they get a lot of 5-star reviews.
Yeah, sometimes. Oh, man, this offseason's just going to be crazy.
If you say... Like, we've just, you know, we're finding pockets of money, and we're idiots. Like, Jim Benning's paid to find these pockets and strategies.
Which idiot can do it better? That's really the question you're asking. My goodness, if he actually listens to C4, we just got blacklisted. As we look to wrap this episode up, though, I want to remind everyone, we did say that the season is over and we would be back. Although Anna's reaction tells me maybe we won't be like.
No, sorry. There is chaos going on in my landlord's place above me.
Well, hopefully everyone stays safe in this chaos. It's just your facial reactions, kind of.
Sorry, but yeah, I kind of want to.
Yep. Anywho,
tell this 5-year-old, sorry.
Hopefully not. Otherwise, we'll be looking for another host. We have an episode coming next week, and we have a special guest joining us. Matt, I will give you one guess who it might be. Any guesses?
I believe it's someone from a podcast that is currently sweeping the Lower Mainland globe, for one.
Not just a podcast, also the number one sports radio station in Vancouver. Anna, do you know who it is?
I do. Can I reveal?
Oh, yeah, you totally can. I've totally said
it. Oh, sorry. I didn't know if we were doing the other.
Yeah, I was like, am I supposed to give another clue here?
We're totally doing the reveal here. Yes. Who is it?
She's also the most qualified person out of all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Most educated. It is Sam from Broadcast.
Mm-hmm. And also the newest voice on TSN 1040 with Rob Fay.
Rob Fay Nation.
Yeah, she's one of the many legal experts in Canucks Twitter. You know, I've noticed that Canucks Twitter has a lot of lawyers.
Maybe she should be like joining Jim.
Maybe. But you know, I look at it this way. Once she joins the show, she becomes friend of the show as a guest, right?
Uh-huh.
I wonder if she can also be C4 legal counsel.
Oh, because for the potential trouble that we'll inevitably get into.
I'm surprised we haven't gotten in trouble having Matt on this podcast now. For how many years have you been with me here, Matt? 5? Or so?
No, more than that. I think it's 6.
Well, is it 6? Okay, because, yeah, like you joined about a year-ish into it, right? So.
Yep.
Anyway, no, we got Sam joining us to talk a little bit about her world. Obviously, we would have preferred to have the Vancouver Canucks still in the playoffs so we could talk much more about the Canucks season, but we'll definitely get her thoughts on how the season went. We'll ask her the same questions that we talked about today, optimism, pessimism going into next year, whenever it may begin.
Yeah, are we making it into a Tyler Mott special next week? Is it
Mott Girl Summer?
Mott Girl Summer.
Mm-hmm.
I think we might just...
But if you, our listeners, have any questions you want to ask of Sam, let us know. You can send us a tweet at the C4 Podcast. You can drop us an email, c4@canuckshockeyblog.com. You can jump into Discord. C4 Discord is the greatest place that is available to you as a Canucks fan. And if you're not a member of our Discord, it's discord.io/C4Podcast. Come be part of the conversation. Chat with us in Gate 16 or, an off topic where we also have some good time too.
When Canucks Twitter just gets a bit much, because it's been intense, especially over playoffs, and you might need a little respite from it and just talk with some like-minded, smart Canucks fans, but we're just all much nicer to each other.
We are, and just to point out, like, we're not in a bubble where we're all just saying yes to each other and we agree. There is
there's lots of differences in opinion,
but we're actually... nice about it, unlike, others in Canucks Social, without naming names. But yeah, Sam's going to be joining us. Got questions for her? Send them our way. We'll do our best to ask them. But as we wrap this episode up, Matt, any final words of wisdom?
Oh, God, it's sad to see the run end, but I'm happy with how far they came.
Cool. Anna?
Yeah, I'm pretty proud of what happened in the playoffs. Canucks went farther than I thought they had any business going. I'm excited to watch the rest of the playoffs. It's kind of looks like an interesting couple matchups, but
I thought they canceled it.
Oh yeah, no, it's over now.
Yeah, it's over.
It's all an asterisk now.
Yeah, the end, which wouldn't have applied if the Vancouver Canucks were still.
Oh, if the Canucks won, it was legitimate.
No. Well, totally. As for me, I just want to thank the Vancouver Canucks for getting me emotionally invested and committed to this team again. It genuinely felt good to be excited. And even when they lost, I was still optimistic going ahead and looking at this core and the bright future that's in front of it. You brought light to an old man's dead heart.
That was bleak. Are we really finishing there?
Well, no. You guys pick on me all the time. I'm an old man, the sports fan in me. I was done, but now I was out there going, yeah, scaring baby forces, celebrating Budweiser, red light going off. Woo!
Gosh.
God, it was a party central here. But no, thank you for that. I needed it. I needed to get excited about sports again. And I am kicking myself for ever suggesting otherwise, as much as I still think taking a year off might have been the better play. But hey, it's done.
And like Bo Horvath said, can't wait to be back.
Yeah. So on behalf of Anna Forsythe at E4603, Matt Lee at Matt Lee underscore 61, myself, Chris at Light Force, and the continuing to remain unfit to podcast and the one I miss the most, Adam Almanarcata at Adam FOC. I'm going to wrap this podcast episode up with those magical two words. We out.